At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Hi there. Welcome to a brand new episode of Against All Odds, an HT Smartcast original with me, Bose. This show is about extraordinary individuals who have survived impossible challenges. Eventually, they have reached where they wanted to. This show is about passion and persistence.
HT Smartcast.
You are listening to an HT Smartcast original.
Hi, I'm HT Smartcast, and I hope you're safe and well. Your episode is about to begin. But just a small message of solidarity before that. In difficult times like these, living in isolation isn't going to be easy. But what if working from home, our own comfort zones, helps us discover new ways of being? What if this calm, this rest, it helps us listen to ourselves and the people around us more deeply? While that happens, you can find me at htsmartcast.com, connecting you to the world of comedy, culture, motivation, news. You know, just in case you need some smart company. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Today I bring to you Pepe Marai, the co-founder and chief creative officer of Joe Public United, a brand and communications company in South Africa. Having survived bankruptcy to a 50% year-on-year growth over the last decade, what gives him this resilience? We peek back into Pepe's life in the backdrop of the transformation from the old to the new South Africa.
Born 1968 in Stellenbosch in the Western Cape of South Africa, into a very interesting family, because my mother came from an extremely, extremely poor white Afrikaner family. And then the other side, from a very affluent family. So my father was the son of the mayor of Stellenbosch. My mother is actually the person with very high levels of values and belief system. Whereas my father, from the day I can remember, was an alcoholic.
As a child, he would often fantasize about his father being a hero.
And I tried to repackage my father in so many different ways. I remember I used to make up the most fantastical story about my father being an international spy. And then telling people at school the incredible things that my father did.
However, in reality, he was terrified of him.
He was obsessed with guns. And he put my mother and my sister and myself, lined us up next to his bed, and he cocked his gun and he put it against my mother's head. That's kind of one of my first memories that sort of as a child. And then, I mean, I witnessed him trying to shoot someone, actually shooting three shots at another person.
He leaned on his mother for all the strength with a strong value system and grew up grappling for a personal identity.
At school level, academically, I was underachieving and I wanted to become this engineer just for the sake of making money, and I was at a low self-esteem.
He was growing up on two different fault lines. One at home, the stress between his parents who eventually separated when he was 14 years old, and the other, in the society in South Africa, where the blacks weren't even acknowledged as fellow humans.
The 70s and the 80s in South Africa, as a white South African, I was not even aware of the amount of black people in my own country. Because the only people we would see were the people that worked in our homes. And that will be one or two people. We would not see a mass population because they were segregated so far away. But I was definitely conditioned a racist. And if I think back, I mean, we would think nothing as young white boys to throw stones at a black guy. We would think it was funny. And then that was perpetuated because when I went to the army, which back then was only for white men, you didn't see black men in the army. And even there, we were indoctrinated that black people are evil and they're the enemy.
Conscription with the army was mandatory. Once while he was on his way back at the airport, he discovered his pair of magic glasses, the ones that would let him see the world with clarity.
On the last day of my service, which back then was a war on the border of Namibia, then it was called Southwest Africa, I was waiting to depart back to South Africa for a plane, and I met a guy who was a graphic designer. And we were waiting for a plane, and he started explaining to me what a graphic designer does. And he somehow had his portfolio, like a book of his work, with him, and he showed me what he does. And I don't know what it was, but I instinctively knew this is what I want to do, and got a diploma in graphic design. And when I discovered art, I turned out to be exceptionally good at it. So I had a natural intuition and flair for design and art, which I never knew I had. I became much more self-confident and believed in myself. And I think one of my big discoveries when I joined art school, and it's a gift if I look back, because maybe if I became an engineer, I would not have changed my circle of influence, and I might still to this day be partly a racist. But even then, I got the gift of engaging with people that were much more liberal. Artists back in those days had already had black friends in their homes, and to be in a subculture of artists at an art school where people were speaking about freeing Nelson Mandela and anti-apartheid, I wanted to be part of that narrative, which was a new narrative for me. I came literally, it was almost like a complete about turn from coming out of a very secluded racist upbringing. And not saying my mother was an incredibly good person, but it's just your conditioning. They were all conditioned in the sort of sense that white is good and black is not. I mean, it was just crazy thinking back, but that's what it was. And then suddenly, almost to have a rebirth going into a situation where people speak about equality and human rights and diversity being at the heart of creativity. And hence, I think that started my transformation into my journey of towards where I am now and where I'm growing towards.
He was working with an agency in Johannesburg when Nelson Mandela gave his first speech after his release from prison at the town hall in Cape Town.
I stand here.
So the mood collectively in that circle of influence that I was moving in was positive and jubilant and not fearful. You know, a lot of white people back then were fearful. People were believing there will be a new government and the whites will be chased out of the country. But those were the people that were more stuck in the old South Africa with their beliefs. But I wasn't experiencing them because I was now in Johannesburg. And I don't know if you've been to South Africa, but Cape Town to this day is very much like Europe, whereas Johannesburg is very integrated. So even back in the 90s, it was already much more integrated, culturally diverse. Today it's completely, but back then it was already happening. And even in our advertising agency, we had one or two black guys that were already working with us in our business space. So we were incredibly jubilant together with the majority of our nation. I was part of that transformation. I was part of the new South Africa. And we were we were extremely excited. And of course, in 1995, the World Cup was just an epic experience in our country.
Thereafter, he with his co-founders founded Joe Public, an advertising agency in 1998. Pepe wanted to bring advertising closer to the man on the street. But the lure of making their idea global made them sell the company to an American firm.
I mean, that was really hard. As entrepreneurs, suddenly being owned 100% by a corporation and earning too much money to get out and start again. Yeah, so that part of the journey was extremely tough. I mean, everything that we believed in, our takeaway model fell apart. Doing great work, beautiful, creative campaigns just was the last thing that anyone was interested in. All the global people were interested in was just money. They just want, where's my return? Where's my return? So there was no focus on any creativity, on our products, on our people, on excellence. It was all just became about money. And it was soul destroying until I think 2006. And I actually had a very senior executive who was a racist, a blatant racist. And because I come from that background and I've worked very hard to grow away from that conditioning, I fired him. A month later, he went and worked for our biggest client. He became our client and he fired us and we lost 2/3 of our business overnight. I mean, probably one of the worst work life days of my life, having to retrench more than 50% of our staff. And I think that was the beginning of the big turning point of my life, because I wasn't making money. I was working for someone else. I just lost half our business. I was out of shape. I was drinking a lot. I was working too hard. My relationship with my wife. So everything was starting to fall apart. And I think I was 38 years old then.
Is it possible to make a comeback from where he was? What did he do?
And I discovered my life purpose in January 2007. I did a transformational workshop, very, very deep experience, very deep experience. Maybe one of the toughest experiences of my life. But I was searching for answers. And I discovered my life purpose. And my purpose, my life purpose, which I discovered, my reason for being on this planet in this lifetime, was such a powerful experience that it changed my vision for my life radically. Radically changed my vision for my life. And hence it changed everything that I believed our business should be about. And so I started motivating for buying the business back in 2007.
The firm thereafter resurfaced steadily and did good business with 50% year-on-year growth for a decade until another debacle hit them.
We also went into 2008 into the recession, where we went pretty much almost went under. In fact, we were technically bankrupt.
And yet, Joe Public emerged again. Pepe now is a man for whom going down and coming up is a part of the journey. He is now that man who looks at things objectively.
That the worst thing that can happen is always the best thing that can happen. I have had so many experiences of this as a life lesson from very young. Every time I thought in the moment something was really terrible, a few months later or a year later, I would discover that that was actually the best thing that could happen.
His 300-man strong company with over 800 million rands in turnover is under pressure yet again. Now it's the Corona crisis. What's his take on the role of business houses across the world during this crisis?
The purpose of Noah's Ark was to save the human race, but you have to ensure that the ark doesn't sink. Now business is the ark. Business is the ark that's created for the sustainability of people.
And we must agree that we are all witnessing that arc around us. That's it from me. If you know of more such people who have inspired you and wish that I talk about them, do reach out to me at Bose for Leadership, that is Bose numeric for Leadership at Twitter and Instagram, and Shubham Basu on LinkedIn. Alternatively, you can look for the handle at HT Smartcast on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. The podcast is available on Spotify, JioSaavn, Google and all your favorite podcasting apps. I will be back next week with a brand new story.
This was an HD Smartcast original.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.